and welcome to the second episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is joining me today.
Hello, it's Joss.
Oh, come on, Joss.
They already know who I am now.
No, but you have to introduce yourself and the job that you do.
Okay. Hello, I'm Joss, and I am the photographer and videographer. Not the videotographer.
I had to bite my lips so hard last week.
And who else is joining me?
My name is Luke, and I'm one of the buyers. A buyer, not a buyert, or any other words with extra T's.
Amazing.
I'm sorry. I'll stop.
It's okay.
Okay, gentlemen. And how are you both doing this week?
I'm all right. Busy as busy can be.
What have you been filming and photographing this week?
Well, I haven't actually been able to get through to photographs at the moment. I've been doing unbelievable amounts of videoing, not of myself for once, but of countless amounts of companies that are coming in to do videos on their new products.
Anything interesting and fun?
Today we looked at a load of Zoom products, which was kind of cool, good fun, guitar pedals.
Oh, because they've got their new range of pedals out. Was it the new pedals?
Yeah,
it was the GUN stuff.
I don't know the Zoom stuff.
G4 multi-effects, mostly multi-effects products.
Oh, is it? That's a shame. I'd hoped, because of course Zoom have released their new Rocket with two T's.
Oh yeah, they have, haven't
series
they?
Series of pedals. I was hoping that's what you were filming when you said.
Not yet. He
Zoom
said
stuff.
that we'd probably get to that.
Yeah.
But also. Pro audio stuff that I won't delve into.
No, yeah, fair enough. This is the Guitar Shop podcast after all. But yeah, the with Zoom, with their effect pedals, the Rocket stuff, I'm quite intrigued to see this Rocket stuff, because people have been asking for them in the shop, and incidentally we've been told by Zoom that we can't stock them until we've had training on the pedals.
Yeah, it all got a bit weird where they didn't want to sell us any of the pedals until we'd had a guy to come in.
Makes me sound like these pedals might be amazing.
Well, the Archer, which is like the
emissary of the Gorgonites.
Yes. Greetings, Alan. Now shut up. It's all got a bit weird. Basically, we're going to have them in stock at some point.
The Archer is the one everyone's been talking about.
Yeah, the Klon clone.
Right.
They're all quite. They're basically just oversold on them, and we've got sort of wait for a while.
Do you think, I mean, it's another Klon clone for a very saturated Klon clone market, but I guess the big one...
pardon the little pun.
I guess the biggest one really recently has been the Soul Food, the Electro-Harmonic Soul Food. Do you think it's going to rival the sort of massive... Because that was... I mean, it came close to being our Gear of the Year, Product of the Year last year.
On terms of sales, or was it in terms of just the guys in the podcast enjoying it that much?
Yeah, it's just popularity. Actually, I think it was because we offer one up to be the listener's choice, and I think it might have been the Soul Food that was the listener's choice for last year.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a wicked pedal.
Yeah.
It's... I
feel like the amount of money as well. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the Archer is more expensive.
How much?
I want to say 149.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on that, so don't quote me.
I am not reassured by a £49 price tag, especially not on an Electro-Harmonics pedal. I would much rather it was £100.
Well, I mean,
so that I can guarantee that it's made properly. But you know.
It's crazy how the whole Klon clone?
Klon clone
market, as you said, is saturated with all these companies doing Klon representatives and different copies and stuff. I mean, I've tried. There's a good friend of mine who comes into the store, Steve Burrows. I'm sure we all know who Steve is. He comes in, and I got to try his reissue version of the Klon.
Yeah.
And they sound, the Soul Food to me sounded nothing like it.
Well, you know, I don't think they found... I think they've just been tagged up with it and they've got similar controls.
That's exactly how I feel about it.
Regardless of that, it's a good-sounding pedal.
Don't get me wrong, it's an awesome-sounding pedal.
But
I just wish they wouldn't call it a Klon clone when you hear the reissue Klon or the other one, the original, I've never heard an original, but you hear it, you know, on YouTube and stuff. You just hear it. You know what it sounds like. And they don't sound like it. Why not just call it, I don't know, a new overdrive?
But, I mean, the thing is, if we continue with the... saturated and those sort of puns, there's a bit more transparency to the Klon clone market. Because all overdrives are copies of other overdrives.
They are.
Like, there's just the way they're put together internally, so much stuff is
similar.
It's
like the chicken and the egg, isn't it?
Yeah, you tweak a few things and you make a slightly different pedal, and there isn't really anything new out there. Like, I mean, like the, I think it's the Lumberjack, the Electro-Harmonix, which is the logarithmic overdrive.
Yeah, they brought that at the same time, didn't they?
That's a new way of doing overdrive, and if you're stacking it with other things, it sort of sounds okay, but otherwise it sounds a bit weird.
Okay.
What about
some might say really bad.
What was the East River a copy of?
I don't know off the top of my
head. East River's kind of cool as well. I like that whole sort of swampy, muffled overdrive sound.
I forget how many, but there's like four or five different actual types of overdrive, and they're all just sort of tweaks along those.
Oh, really?
And some you get really high-spec components, some you get cheaper components. Mm. Some people have found that magic mojo. It's like, inside an amp, most amps with treble, middle, bass have basically the same tone stack. How they do the EQ is basically the same. It's just different components.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of, and therein lies the magic and the mystery.
Fair enough.
So it's sort of
the magic.
Intriguing.
Have either of you had a chance to try the bass solve through food?
Oh,
no.
Yes.
With a guitar?
I really want to.
Yeah, I don't like it as a bass drive at all.
I think it's great as an overdrive pedal for a guitar.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the thing. When I plugged it in to try with a bass, it kind of immediately sounded to me like a guitar drive going through a bass. So it made me think that, because a lot of people have said that the bass soul food actually works great on guitar.
Yeah.
And I haven't, the bass market haven't been embracing it really to the same extent.
And
certainly after playing it,
it was interesting as well watching how the two sort of sold, because the soul food came out, it sold shed loads, like instantly, just couldn't keep them in stock. Bass soul food came out, I thought, right, that's going to get taken up as a guitar pedal, people will use it as that. Came in, ordered sort of 50 or 60 of them, and they just sat on the shelves.
Yeah.
Like, I presumably
strange,
because all the bassists kind of listened to it and went, well, that's no good as a bass pedal. And most guitarists looked at it and went, well, it's a bass pedal.
Yeah.
And it just,
I guess that's the problem.
But now that it's really picked up and it's almost sort of one-to-one.
Oh, is it? Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I think but I bet it's guitarists that it's picked up with.
It's
like they might as well release a soul food with the switch between the circuitry. You know, like you get
a
soul food with different voicings.
Yeah,
they should just
like
have a voicing switch because, I mean, bass players are probably purchasing the pedal, you know, but... I mean, everyone that I know that has one of those is a guitar player.
Yeah.
And if they had the soul food with the switch between those two voicings, can you imagine how that would sell?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Or just like a soul food deluxe.
With the two buttons on the green turnips or whatever it's called.
The multi-effects with
three. The orange orangutan. Green turnips.
What is that pedal called?
Turnip greens.
It is
turnip greens.
Yeah, I haven't actually plugged one in yet myself.
I've never heard of this thing.
It's two soul foods, isn't it?
It's a soul food and some other bits.
Oh, is it? Oh, right.
I forget what off the top of my head, but Electro-Harmonix do a few different multi-effects where you sort of look at it and it's like those old 80s, like Aria multi-effects.
Yeah.
Where it's just four pedals chunted together.
Yeah.
But they've done a couple of things where you can sort of like share oscillators so you can sort of sync up modulations, or you can route things in parallel or series.
Mm.
So it's a little bit more.
Is it the epitome or the epitome?
The epitome.
Yeah. Like that's another one that where they've sort of put the things together, but then added in a couple of tweaks. So
there's some secret. There's some secret settings on there.
Yeah.
I was inverting commaing my hands, so you guys know. It was like there's some secret settings, isn't there? Like that you can't find by just playing around with it.
Yeah.
There's some settings on there where you go on the Electro-Harmonix website and it says do this, this and this and you can achieve this, which is kind of cool.
It's just basically, you get a bit more out of it. They're quite interesting if you treat them as one large effect with three things in them.
Yeah.
As opposed to just buying three individual stomp boxes together.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's of course. All. Well, speaking of pedals, gentlemen, this week we've had another big announcement on the pedal market, which would be
Strymon have released a piece of paper that says dig on it.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah,
anybody that wasn't following or didn't see the Strymon teaser campaign, they started sort of letting the word out early on this one, and there were sort of a few shots of their head sound designer sitting at a bench with a pink pedal and a rack of delays.
Oh yeah, it's pink. I definitely love it.
It's a dual delay though, this one, yeah, isn't it? The Dig.
Mm.
So
yeah, yeah.
I haven't actually had a chance to read any more than the caption that we shared on Facebook about it. So
it's a dual delay.
Right.
Basically you've got one delay and then you've got a second delay which is set relevant to the, or in reference to that one with subdivisions. So you do like the dotted rhythm on something, or you can have like an eighth note delay with a quarter note and just sort of build things up a little bit weirdly. Or, I mean, through different sort of functions on it, you can separate the two delays out, but that's kind of how it's designed to work. So you can do all those edge style kind of triplet-y things where you play one note and it does six in a rhythm.
Right.
And all that stuff. And it's designed to sound like a lot of the old 80s delays, like the...
So super clean and clinically.
Not as clinical as, say, like a... As
DD3
more modern
or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
the sort of thing that like Albert Lee was talking us through.
Yeah,
at the event,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And like the old Korg, the old Korg SDDs, which Korg have more recently sort of reissued in the pedal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that sort of style of thing where it's
okay.
It's getting towards the super clean, but it still has a character of its
okay.
own. I haven't had much chance to check it out other than sort of looking at
it. I mean,
if
anyone can make something super clean but still have a character of its own, it's going to be Strymon, isn't it?
Yeah. I think
what's been released on it? Have we got a price on it yet?
Yeah, 249. 249? Fits in with the rest of the 5-knob
stuff. Oh, so it's
going to
be with everything else.
So
everything's released. All the information is out there now as of, I think, yesterday morning.
Oh, brilliant.
Really behind.
I am a bit behind. I haven't read it. But 249's pretty cheap for it. I mean, it makes it cheaper than a Big Sky.
Well, Big Sky's a 249.
Well, it's the same,
Blue Sky.
Blue Sky. It's the same price as all the other standard compact versions
of
the pedals.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, okay. Strymon sort of separate things out into what they call the 5-knobs and the bigger pedals.
Right, I see.
They don't seem to have a name, sort of name because they've got a different number of knobs.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah, the 5-knobs are 249. And, yeah, just want to give it a play. I want to sit there with a Timeline and a Flint and a Big Sky.
My favourite pedal ever, the Flint.
And the Dig, and just get them all out.
It's Strymon have really sort of moved the goalposts for pedals over the last few years, because I think they're still selling very, very well for us as a pedal brand, which, you know, I mean, if we went back 5 years and we were to say that someone had released a delay pedal for £250,
yeah, you'd sort of...
It would be hugely, you'd wince, and it would be unpopular, and it would only be bought by a handful of real fanatics. Yeah.
And then you'd say $399 for the bigger version.
Yeah.
And people would go, well, you're not going to sell, no one's going to want that.
It's the price of a guitar.
Yeah, I could buy two guitars for that much.
Exactly.
Seeing as you bought one for a fiver and a sandwich.
Yes, I mean, that happened.
Yeah.
Luke did genuinely buy a bass for a fiver and a sandwich.
I had a friend that needed £5 and some lunch, and he happened to have his brother's bass on him. It did me very well for a while recording.
Do you still own that bass?
No.
No.
That may have been eBayed.
For more than a fiver and a sandwich?
Look, there's a reason I'm in this industry.
A tenner and a sub.
They really have a sort of... And they've just moved things along in terms of actual spec and sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. They've brought a lot of the capability of sort of high-end rack gear into compact floor pedals. Compact floor pedals will always be more popular with people at a sort of lower to mid-level of gigging.
Yeah, well, for most gigging.
Well, for most, one wants rack gear. But, of course, it is... I think having rack gear is always a sacrifice because it's a pain to bring around, but it's a sacrifice that at a certain level people become willing to make to get a sort of quality of sound.
That it's the level of having other people to move it.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Strymon making it an option for anyone to have on their pedal board is brilliant.
And it's interesting to sort of see the amount of people that use them on keyboards and in studios.
That's it. In studios especially, we're starting to see especially the Big Sky is turning up as like... Just an overall mastering tool.
Yeah, yeah. It really is. We're seeing them, like, not mounted, but on the same level as all their rack mount gear.
Yeah.
Like, you see a Big Sky there, and you're just like, that's kind of cool, but...
That's hard to mount.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you sort of wonder when they're going to bring out rack-mounted versions of things.
Yeah.
You, yeah.
I mean, sort of one of the guys on the Facebook group commented that he doesn't like anything, that he doesn't want to spend that much money for something which is basically a box running some software. And I think it is true. I mean, obviously it is like a high-end analog-to-digital, digital-to-analog converter running some algorithms, but obviously once you've spent that much money on something like the Strymon, it's just super reliable, and you've got something giggable as opposed to something like a computer that's just going to end up crashing.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it would be interesting to see if Strymon do a rack mount version that can run all the algorithms when you only ever need one at a time, like in the studio.
Yeah.
And see sort of how that goes.
They should definitely get on that. They're such a small company, Strymon.
Yeah.
It's really funny to sort of follow them on the various social networks and see that they like announce on Twitter that they're having their sort of work social down a pub. Like, well, around the corner.
Well, they did one last year, and that was when they released the Deco.
Yeah.
So they did it this year with the teasers.
Yeah.
And I think we're on about the same social, or was it there another one that they were doing?
No, I'm on about the teasers.
And yeah, it's just, they call it like Strymon Social, and they just get a bunch of people around for a cheese and wine party. And it's like, hey, there's the new delay pedal, people.
It's just a totally different way of doing business than we're used to from sort of all the massive manufacturers that we deal with.
There's like 10 people there or something just making all these
working away.
It's great.
Yeah. Right, well, we never actually finished any of the topic that we were trying to cover last week, which was basically an aim to introduce the two of you to everyone, which seems to have gone well. We managed to get through kind of like your gear and your setups and kind of a bit about you as people and the music you like and stuff, which was cool. I think that was important to give everyone an idea of what sort of questions you guys are going to be best at answering. But there are a few more things I wanted to go through with you. And we've had a lot of questions on the group this week as well, so I'm going to go through quite a few of those. And there are some big questions as well, so I imagine we're going to spend a lot of time talking about those. So I will fly through a few sort of final points from last week's podcast, and then we'll move on to the questions. So I guess first of all, if I start with you, Joss.
Okay.
We obviously spoke about your current setup and everything, but is there currently on the market that of instruments that GAK sell? Is there a dream guitar that you have at the moment?
It's horrible.
We will be updating this every week as the dream changes.
Yeah, of course. It does change weekly.
I mean, the problem is my dream guitar isn't something that we stock, unfortunately.
You're always looking at custom.
I am,
stuff.
Yeah.
But is there something? Is there maybe something you don't have? It doesn't have to be a dream, but is there something that you don't have at the moment that that you've got your eye on or that you're thinking about that could be your next?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of bits of things. I guess if there was a life and death situation choice of pick a guitar out of the store, it'd probably be one of the custom shop Fender 51 Nocasters.
Yeah?
Yeah, that'd probably be the one that I'd have to go for out of the store.
51 Nocasters, my greatest loved and lost.
Really? Oh, because of course you had one. And,
yeah.
You were an idiot.
Yeah.
But what was your reason you couldn't warrant the amount of money that you spent on it, so you sold it and then went out and bought a Telecaster?
I downgraded. From a 51 custom shop Relic Nocaster to a Rode one.
The Rode ones are great, though.
It's a wicked guitar.
Why, though?
Because I was only using it as a spare.
Have you managed to set up the Roadborne yet?
Yeah, mint green guard, brass compensator.
Wait, what guard was on there before? Just a white one?
White one single ply. I've always really liked 60s tellies.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, it's a maple board, so it's never going to look...
I definitely prefer the 60s over the 50s stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like bound tellies as well.
Yeah.
And rosewood necks. I just think they look great.
Yeah, that is the telly. Mm.
Jay Cross would have hit us around the head with the mic stands by now.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fine. He's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just 60s tellies are great. I mean, I've had a Baja telly back in the day, I should say. I think that's a bit of a rite of passage of the podcast.
50s Baja, because there is a 60s Baja
now, which is
awesome.
I had the 50s Baja, loved it, sold it. That's the Baja's why I've rewired all my Strats for two pickups.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Weird. Okay, cool.
But anyway, sorry, you were saying...
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, back to your. So you think a no-caster review thing, which is, I think, an unusual choice for you, considering I guess you are quite defined by being a humbucker guitarist.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. It's just that there's. I mean, the good thing about doing the YouTube stuff is that I get the opportunity to play essentially every single guitar that we sell.
Yeah.
You know, do a video or do photos. But that's it. Like,
nine times out of ten, if we have a situation where we don't have something to be filmed and you have the opportunity to go and pick something, nine times out of ten, you'll choose like an ESP or an Ibanez or something like that.
Yeah.
Something with big sort of high output.
It's because the thing is, I'm waiting for a company like that to really hit me, really. I mean those companies are, but take for instance the guys from Ibanez Japan came into the store a little while ago and they were talking to me about what they think they would need to do to the guitars to make them sell better. Essentially,
I love those little visits.
Yeah,
and it's all come in and ask you really...
Well, they're awesome because the Japanese guys, they don't introduce themselves or anything until they're done.
Yeah,
so they come into the store, they look around the store, they ask like for help, or they ask, can I try this, can I do this, can I do that, what do you think of that? And then right at the end, when you've slagged off all their guitars, they go, oh, by the way, we are the official designers, the head designers of the Ibanez guitars.
Blah, 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 blah. Always, would you like a t-shirt?
Exactly.
That was always my favourite. Yes, I would take one of your extra large Ibanez t-shirts that I would never wear. Thank you.
So they came around and they were asking me about all the bits and pieces that they think they'd need to change to make the guitars better, or just an evolutionary state of Ibanez, essentially. And I said, well, the thing with...
More numbers.
Exactly.
Give them more numbers.
Exactly. The thing
we
with the Ibanez...
need harder titles.
I want to be able to not remember any of your models. The thing is, with the evolutionary state of the heavier side of music now, if you look at all the musicians, hardly any of them are playing, unless they're along the lines of the commercial side of heavier music, none of them are playing ESP guitars, Ibanez guitars. They're all playing these custom build things of all these different companies, unless they get given a signature model.
But how much of that do you think is just because that sort of culture is now built up? It's kind of people trying to outdo each other with the most boutique.
I think that is part of it.
Because of the sort of the frictionlessness of the internet, everyone knows about every little every brand. So you've got to really seek out someone that
makes... It's because they take photos of them afterwards and put them online and go, check out my, you know...
Yeah, and then sort of everyone sees.
Oh my God, I got to get one of those. I got to check them out and stuff like that.
It's about
That's the thing. I mean, there's Jake Bowen from Periphery. He has a signature Ibanez.
Yeah.
And then you've got Mark from Periphery, who has a signature PRS.
Yeah.
And then you've got the guy. Then you got what's his name, Misha, who has a signature Jackson. Now that's Ibanez, PRS, and Jackson. That's three incredibly well-known commercial guitar companies. But before that, you know, then those three companies, we stock all of those guitars. Before that, they were playing guitars companies that I had to research. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do wonder if it's coming back around. I mean, I do think it was a few years ago that the custom stuff was so prolific. I mean, if you look at like Tosin Abasi, even has come back around for playing every weird custom shop stuff under the sun to play an Ibanez.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think a lot of it sort of started possibly, well, maybe not started, but was sort of aided along its way by Black Machine, who really 100%, 100%. Tweaked the design of guitar to suit that style of chunky, sort of sixth-esque kind of riffing.
Yeah.
Sort of without
degent.
Them... degent.
Degent.
Without them sort of chipping in, I don't know if that whole sort of road would have gone.
I mean, everyone, like, you see Misha, you see Nolly, who's the bass player, who also was doing some stuff with a band called Red Seas Fire, and then obviously the guys in Sixth as well. They're all using, at the beginning, they're all putting out there that, oh my God, check out my Black Machine B6.
Yeah.
You know, and then they'd move on to companies like Strandberg, which is my guitar that I want, which is my dream guitar, by the way, just so you know. And then they moved on to, you know, Strandbergs and then Demon-esque guitars and all these boutique companies. And now, as Joe said, they've all come full circle and they're using guitars that are readily available from the beginning.
Well, that, or, you know, sort of with the signature model thing, it's more about getting an established builder to sort of tweak the
design. Exactly.
Because
they're still boutique spec,
yeah,
but they've just got the standard name. So you play Tosin Abasi's main flagship model. I mean, that's like Babinga and Wenge and older and satin. And
I mean, which isn't something Ibanez would have ever built prior to all those sort of custom builders coming in,
I guess.
No, not
just a standard thing anyway.
Yeah, so it's kind of, because the needs of the music were a bit weird compared to what was already established in instrument design, I think people have had to go to slightly more esoteric builders to get that.
Yeah.
And then the market's now sort of big enough that it's kind of gone full circle and gone back to the bigger designers who are like, okay, we are PRS, let's cater to that.
Yeah.
And see. And I think it's interesting that guitar design has moved on with like sort of thinner bodies and different tone woods and multi-laminate necks and things.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're dragging this.
This
one.
Is well, we came a massive way away from just picking a Nocaster.
Wow.
Yeah, so I want a five-piece laminate Wenge neck, please, on my 51 Nocaster.
So, what was the reason for the Nocaster? Anyway, sort of coming back.
Well, there's two. There's kind of like, I mean, I was brought up on grunge music, so we're talking like Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, all that sort of stuff. And the guy that got me into guitar playing, Mike McCready, the guitar player from Pearl Jam, he swears by a 51 Nocaster and a 59 Les Paul, and those are the two sort of the sort of fundamental dream state guitars for, I think, you know, a lot of guitar players that are into whiddly music in general.
Yeah.
Just because of the heritage of those guitars. I know I'm never going to own a 51, and I know I'm never going to own a 59 Les Paul, but thank God they have reissues, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, thank goodness Custom Shop is so good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's flip the question over to you then, Luke.
It would be, predictably enough, I think possibly maybe like a 61 or a 62 Custom Shop Relic Strat.
Stick with Strat?
Yeah, I just...
Even though you'd have to change the wiring to be like a Telecaster.
Well, no. I mean, if he gets it from Custom Shop, you just get him to do it for him.
And then I'll rewire it back normally. By that point, I'll have realised there's no point.
Send him a picture and just be like, haha.
So we both go for Custom Shop Fenders, essentially.
I just think they're on point.
But I think I'd possibly go with like a 60s spec, but with like the old American standard saddles.
Oh, of course.
Like the big chunky... The chunky sort of machined ones, just because I think they sound better than the folded steel saddles that they use. And when I say better, I just mean less stratty.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the reasons why my Strat doesn't sound as stratty as some other Strats.
quite a sentence there.
And yeah, that and sort of some nice bare knuckle pickups. Basically just a more expensive version of the American standard I've already got.
Well, that's good. That's a great position to be in, where you're sort of asked to pick a dream guitar and it is pretty much a slightly more high-endly built version of something you're playing.
I don't know if that's because the guitar is right for me or because I've been playing the guitar for 15 years and I think I've sort of moulded round it. Mm. I think it's more a case that I'm now right for that guitar.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I think Fender have made a perfectly good instrument and I've just got used to it.
Yeah.
It would either be that, or possibly I'd branch out and go for some form of Jazzmaster. But it would be...
We just got an NOS Jazzmaster in, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that come in the event in the last couple of days.
I do like it when we get Custom Shop Jazz.
No pictures yet, though.
No, oh, sorry.
There's nothing more frustrating than when you look at... Or I find really frustrating when you look at stock movements and all the stock that's come in during the day and go, great. Open up a load of windows and a load of new tabs for stuff I want to check out. And then none of it's been photographed yet.
I hate you.
Oh, I just want to see what it looks like.
Okay, boys. So let's do one more question. Then we're going to go on to the questions by the people on the podcast group.
Cool.
Maybe I want to know what your next purchases you have planned.
Okay.
Joss Allen.
Okay. Wampler Dual Fusion.
Yeah,
straight off the bat, yeah. I know exactly what I want next. I had a go on it today.
What
is
the dual fusion?
That's why there's no pictures, mate. I'm just sitting here playing guitar all day.
Although I did see you Instagrammed a picture of the dual fusion.
Yeah, I did.
So
What is the Wampler dual fusion?
If you don't know now, you'll never know.
The dual fusion is a dual overdrive pedal by the company Wampler.
Who also have a podcast, Wampler.
Do they?
Yeah.
They have their own in-house podcast, which I think is really cool.
That is cool.
I mean, I am really impressed that it's probably been going half the time that our podcast has. And I'm very impressed that they've managed to keep that going because they can only talk about their own pedals.
Have you listened to it?
I haven't.
I don't think they do. I think they just talk about loads of stuff.
So the same as this, they're just...
Yeah. Like, they're not focused on their own thing. They just talk... It's called tone chasing.
Oh, right.
And it's just about chasing tone.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So I think they just go on about things. Because I think... Is it Brian Wampler?
He's
quite a sort of famous modder and designer of things through sort of forums. So he's just a bit of a gear nerd like the rest of us.
Cool.
He just wants to talk about stuff.
That's pretty awesome to have the head of like a company like that finding the time to do a podcast.
Yeah, well, he obviously loves his company, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course. So anyway, so the Dual Fusion, it's new, is it? It's a new...
No, well, I mean, it's not new. No, I mean, it's last year new.
Right.
Sort of middle last year.
Can you tie down a week?
Yeah. And basically, it's a guitar player called Tom Quayle. It's his signature pedal, and as the name states, he's like a jazz fusion guitar player,
right?
Just an absolute monster of a guitar player. Definitely up there for me at the moment in terms of who I'm listening to and checking out and stuff. And I've been going on about his pedal for ages. I just haven't bought one, but it's incredible. It's a slightly different voiced Brad Paisley and Euphoria overdrive pedals, both of those, but slightly different voiced, and then you can stack them as well, so you can have both on at the same time or just one or the other.
Oh, cool. What do they hit the shelf at?
I have no idea.
Right.
I'd need to double check that.
Yeah,
good work, boys.
Excellent.
Okay, Luke.
Yeah, I was just going to add on the Dual Fusion, they're really interesting in that you've got in and outs for each drive. So although it's two drives in a box, you can come out of one and then go into something else and then back into it. Or you can sort of series parallel things. And
that's great.
It's really cool.
Yeah, so you can sort of adjust how it stacks with things, and it's just a slightly more practical way of doing pedals. My next ear is going to be a Boss ES8 as soon as they're available.
Really?
Yeah.
I've had quite a few people actually message me about those, asking when. Of course, because I play in the math music scene, pedal boards are massive. And so I've had a few people like Alpha Male Tea Party and Cleft have both got hold of me to ask when they're going to be in.
I just think I can't move my feet quickly enough. I think I need something to help me.
How many pedals do you have?
Not huge compared to those guys, but it's just a lot of shifts at the same time. I mean, maybe 11 or 12 pedals on the board. And it's
that's
just kind of...
Bad. That's probably the least amount you can have and warrant something like this.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I should probably buy more pedals to make it slightly more worthwhile.
Yes, exactly.
But and the fact that, I mean, you can... It sort of amp switches and things, and you can change pedal orders with it, unlike a lot of other switchers.
Yeah, it's definitely the most comprehensive sort of pedal switcher out there. And I think incredibly reasonably priced, considering how much it does in comparison to other pedal switchers as well.
Well, saying that's going to be my next purchase, that probably won't be actually...
They're not here till June anyway, aren't they?
No, I think we'll have free stock available of the Blues Cubes prior to that.
Oh, I'm doing a video on that today, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
had a go on it yesterday, and it's just absolutely phenomenal.
Do you know which one you tried?
The Artist.
The Artist. And what is the difference? Because there's an Artist and a Studio.
Artist and a Stage.
Stage, that's it. But there's a 112 available in both the Artist and the Stage, is that right?
No, the Artist is available as a 112 and a 212.
Right.
The Stage is just available as a 112.
Right.
And then there's a head and cab and stuff above it. But the big difference is sort of 20 watts and some of the switching.
Right.
Like the bigger stage has got an effects loop, and you use the GAFC foot control for tweaking things.
I mean, if I was a session player...
I would
use that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would happily use that. I mean, I played the Artist at the store yesterday with a custom shop telly and a 51, and it just sounded so awesome. They got this dual mode. Have you seen the dual mode where you can have the clean and the overdrive at the same time? And it's amazing because it just makes the overdrive sound like there's some sort of natural compression on it because of the clean undertones.
Yeah.
And then, but the clean has got this awesome gain structure thing on it as well, where you can crank the gain on the clean and then it just sounds like a slightly broken up, you know, Fender style
sort
amp
of basement style thing.
And it's just awesome because you can get those tones out of a low wattage. I mean, this one was 45 watts maximum, and I had the volume, the master volume, not even a quarter of the way up, and it was horrendously loud.
But then you've got the attenuation,
exactly,
you can knock it back, and that's sort of why I'm so interested in it, because my drummer, who moved into my house 2 or 3 weeks ago, recently bought himself one of the big DTX Yamaha electronic kits.
Which he set up the other night.
Which we set up. That's all working. He's built some acoustic decoupling stage so it doesn't thump through the floor. And if I can get an amp quiet enough. Yeah. Like he,
that's really thorough.
Like he sits there drumming at 11 o'clock at night, and our neighbours next door
that's essential. Yeah.
That complain about everything haven't complained yet.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we were watching a football game one evening and had a few beers and had football. Like 3 or 4 friends around. I don't even like football. I was just there because a friend had opened a nice bottle of wine. I should clarify here. So yeah, I was sitting in and they complained about that.
Right.
But yeah, he's now managed to make his drumming quiet enough that...
Oh, that's brilliant.
So yeah, I need an amp that is quiet enough, and my twin is slightly
too loud. Definitely not quiet enough.
Amazing. The Blues Cube, competition for the Blues Junior, what do you think? Oh. Do you think it's going to knock it off its mantle? Or do you think Fender will always have it because of the name and because no one expected Roland to do this?
People need to try it. They need to understand it.
That's almost the problem, isn't it? Roland haven't really had... A live amp worth talking about since the Jazz Chorus.
Jazz Chorus.
And that's, I don't know, tone on those sometimes I think is, I've never been a fan of the Jazz Chorus.
No, it depends what you like.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah. I mean, we're talking like, I mean, from my side of things, I'm not afraid of the digital aspect of the amp side of things because I've been there a lot, as I've said.
To you, so, it's actually a bit too traditional, I'd say.
I would say so. It doesn't have any flashing lights. So when I plugged it in yesterday, there wasn't me going, oh, it's digital, it's not going to sound good. This was just literally me sitting down and going, what is this going to sound like?
Yeah.
And I played it, and it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll try and make the video as most comprehensive as I possibly can to put forward how good it sounds.
Yeah, it's going to be a tricky one.
It will. My playing is awful.
The thing that really surprised me about the Blues Cube is that it looks really good. And Roland are the last company to ever think about how things look. I mean, they came up with pedal design like 40 years ago and then have just used it. And like the Blues, the Cube range, whilst they're probably the best practice amps
Terminator.
Yeah, they look atrocious. But I mean, they're brilliant, and it doesn't matter what they look like for
homies. No, because they look as if you could drop them off a building and they'd still work like
which you
they
can.
Do.
Yeah. But the Blues Cube, I was amazed when it was like, it's blonde. And
it just looks like a nice
brown
little Blues Cube.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I really love blonde amps.
Yeah.
Fender 6263 Smooth Blonde with the gold weave. Just, they are the best amps ever.
And I know we talked about this last week, but I can't believe they released the cabinet and head as a 410. And it's like such a traditional thing to do.
Yeah, I think that side of things, realistically, they're sort of doing more for artists and endorsed. Mm. I mean, just sort of thinking about it, I don't think that many people are going to buy a 410.
No, I mean the 410's £1,000.
Yeah, they're expensive.
And
yeah.
The head is the same.
What, the 410 itself? Are we talking about?
No, there's
a
410 cab and a head.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What, all together, both of them together, it's £1,000?
No, I think the cab on its own.
The cab on its own is £1,000.
Well, maybe it's the head that's £1,000, the cab's like £500 or £600.
Something's like £899, and I think that's the head.
The head's £899.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
I can't remember.
To be honest, as a gigging musician...
Check the website.
This is making great radio.
As gigging musicians, anyway, I mean... I would say that all three of us would prefer to go out with one of those combos anyway, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at 45 watts, I know it is digital power, but at 45 watts and in the way shows and stuff go now, you can get it mic'd anyway.
Yeah, of course.
But 45 watts, that's going to be loud enough for gigging, 100%. And it's small enough to take wherever you want it to go as well.
Yeah, and light enough.
And light enough.
And reliable enough. It's definitely, I think, a bit of a game changer.
Definitely.
I think it's going to be... It's going to depend on how many people can get on board with Roland.
Yes.
In
terms of as a professional gigging piece of equipment.
Exactly.
I mean, there's thousands of people that are on board with them. But
yeah, as a pedal brand or a practice amp brand.
Yeah, it's just
it's a totally different field for them to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Right, well, let's move on to some questions. Let's see how many of these we get through. So these have been... questions taken from our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. And Josh has put these together for me today, so I probably haven't read all of them properly. Right. first of all, on the group, Callum asks if you could only use two pedals ever again, including multi effects. We have only got half the question here, but that's okay. He said, what would you use? I assume, and he asked him, why would you use it? <I don't> It says, what would you use and why? But there's definitely more to this question.
No, I think that was the full question.
Oh, really?
Just as an update as we're moving.
It says A.
Oh.
And then I assume there'd be a B. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So let's go for that. If you could only use two pedals again, what would you use?
I think one of mine would probably be a Nova system. It seems to get forgotten a lot. But wicked sounding.
Awesome. What, the TC? That's the, yeah, the multi effects that's, yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome, that's just in a sort of like a two pedal format, isn't
no,
it?
No. It's eight buttons.
Oh, is it?
And it's got that. It's got a really weird switching logic on it.
Oh,
it,
yes, I do remember.
It's got the analog boost and overdrive on it, hasn't it?
Yeah, you've got analog drive on the input, and then everything is sort of digital beyond that. Eight buttons. You can use it like a sort of foot switch thing. So each button is a pedal, or you can use it in a preset mode like a conventional multi-effects. So it's quite flexible in that you can either have sort of four pedals or loads of presets.
They've been making them for a long time.
Mm. Yeah, they've been out since sort of late 2000s. They've been around for a while. They sound good. Mm. Wiki pedals, I think they're like 280, 290 quid or
pounds.
Something
there. Not a lot of pounds at all.
They've sort of started off really expensive and just come down and down and down in price. The only thing that is weird on them is the switching is odd. You sort of line up the preset and then it doesn't switch until you release the pedal.
So it's like...
Oh, right.
Yeah, and when you're trying to use one on the fly, as I have done, you start switching things at all the wrong times.
Yeah, I see. It
goes really bad.
That is strange. But yeah, they are great. Some great compressors on there as well, because I think I considered one for a little while for bass, and it was one of very few multi-effects pedal was not designed for bass that where everything worked very well
sort
of off the bat. So yeah, a second one,
is it maybe an M13?
I mean, that to be honest would probably do you, wouldn't
that does
I
everything guess.
Yeah, so you can just sort of say, well, if I could only have two, I would have one.
I'd need an expression pedal to control the wires and things.
Oh,
in it.
God, you're such a loser. An expression pedal.
All right, okay, well, let's
it's not 1985. Christ.
I'm wounded. Like an M9 or something. I mean,
that's it. As soon as Callum's included multi effects, he's made this very easy.
Yeah, very easy.
Well, no, the Nova system does everything, all the core stuff really well. Great delay.
Is it a tune?
Yeah, there's a tuner in there. Yeah. It's a bit awkward to use, and it's not very visible.
Sure.
But it does all the core stuff. Great delay, great reverb, great choruses. Really, it's got two drives in there that are great. I'm saying great a lot.
Great.
But it doesn't do any quirky stuff. Like, you couldn't suddenly get like a Mutron out of it or whatever.
Like, right, I see. No sort of pog functions or anything.
None of that. It's just meat and potatoes, really good. Mm. So maybe an M9. Just have two multi-effects.
What about you, Joss? Two pedals? I mean, it's going to be easier for you anyway as you're...
It's going to be incredibly easy for me. I mean, the insane thing is that I was going to say the TC Electronic Nova system as well. But literally, so yeah, a tuner, TC Electronic tuner, Polytune, and the Nova system. I think that would suit me right down to the ground.
Oh, just so you can have tuning a little bit easier. Yeah.
Yes.
A little bit of an easy question. Maybe if there'd been, if multi effects hadn't been included, we'd have all been a bit more pushed. Okay, right, moving on. David Price.
I think I'd go like a timeline and a decent drive.
What, if you couldn't have a multi effects?
Yeah, because that way you've got high quality reverb.
Yeah, that's
you can
a good
sort of
idea.
Get the emulation in there. Timeline for all your spacey delay stuff. I don't really play with modulation much, and when I do, it's just a bit of doubling.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a decent drive or a boost, depending on the amp.
What about you, Joss? Only two pedals, no multis?
Tuner, Wampler, Dual Fusion.
Of course you're going to say that at the moment. Fine. Right. David Price asks, active guitar pickups. EMG, Seymour, Duncan, or other options?
Okay.
Are there any other options?
for active guitar pickups?
Other than, I think there's like Fishman Fluence.
Yeah, what about Demarzio? Do they do any?
No.
Demarzio don't do any.
Late Sensor have just released some, haven't they?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Late Sensor have them.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, Fishman have got their new stuff.
And the Fluences.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Fishman's sort of bang on it at the moment, bringing in their new range of electric guitars.
The one in Bill from Mastodon's Les Paul that we have sound awesome. The Hemis or something like that.
Right, okay.
I can't remember if they're Fishman or Les Sensor now, but I think... But they sound awesome.
Is it your channel, Fishman?
Yes, yeah, pickups. We haven't taken on the pickups yet. I'm still a bit cagey about them.
Oh, right, okay.
Just because I haven't had a chance to use them.
No, exactly. I guess we've got to wait and see.
Get some what I think of them.
Yeah, I mean, they spoke to me about them. But I didn't know if they'd even come into being yet.
I believe they are available.
I've seen demos on them online and stuff, so
yeah,
they are there.
They're something we should definitely give a go.
Yeah,
I just haven't had a chance to get them online just yet. I mean,
what is the question?
The question is just active pickups. It's just sort of what's better. EMGs, Seymour Duncans, or are there other options that you think are?
I mean, in terms of actives, if I was going to pick one, it'd just be EMG. I mean, if I was going to go for them, they do their whole new chrome covered series, which is really, really cool.
Yeah,
and a lot of jazz players are using them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of jazz players I know. There is a guy from a band called Scale the Summit. His name's Chris Letchford, something like that. He's got a jazz, he's got a signature guitar by a company called Strandberg, and it's got these EMG chrome-covered 707Xs in. And he plays a side project, which is just clean jazz guitar.
Right.
And it sounds awesome. It sounds incredible. And you can watch the EMG TV video of it.
Yeah.
You've seen those videos and stuff with Devin Townsend doing his crazy stuff and all that sort of stuff.
Devin Townsend being Devin Townsend.
Yeah, who also uses EMGs.
Yeah.
Who also uses the chrome-covered EMG stuff. And then there's guys like the guys from Monuments. They use the chrome-covered EMGs. I mean, everybody's using these new EMGs at the moment. And I know they're active, but I don't know what they've changed about them.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm not too sure. But they've all gone... I don't think it's because of the cover. Obviously, the cover is different.
They do look badass.
They
though.
Do look awesome.
Well, I tell you who else has a signature set of both chrome and gold EMGs.
Zach Wilde?
Zach Wilde with all the bands?
No, I can't remember his name.
Oh,
the fella from Megadeth.
Then, are you?
You gave me a logo.
Dave Mustaine, Seymour Duncan.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Oh.
Jesus.
So we're running that new Dave Mustaine EMG competition.
I'm really glad I looked at those when you gave them to me.
Yeah, Seymour Duncan, Joe.
All right. Well, there's a Seymour Duncan active.
They're the Duncan Livewires. Yes. I've never used any of that stuff.
Oh, really?
Obviously, that was Seymour Duncan in response to EMG doing sort of just every metal guitar ever a few years
Seymour
back.
Duncan have the blackouts as well, though, don't
they? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
there's all that stuff.
Okay. I mean, how many... Basically, Seymour Duncan have given us a load to do some competitions for. So I can't remember how many sets you passed over to my desk. Probably like 8.
Yeah.
Sets, like a couple of gold, most of them silver, which is cool. I think that's a bit more people will be up for putting a silver pickup in. All signed as well by Dave Mustaine.
We got some signed little photos of him.
Yeah, we got signed photos. He's also signed the cases that the pickups themselves come into. We haven't quite got around to it. We've got so many other competitions sort of lined up at the moment and events and things that we haven't sort of found the time to do the Dave Mustaine giveaway just yet. We've got to think of something. I don't know, maybe some sort of shred off, or I don't really know. We're gonna
have to think about it.
We're gonna have to have a think about it. But that would be wicked. Okay.
There's one thing I've just suddenly realised. There's a video somewhere on YouTube where one guy sits and plays over the same backing track, playing like the same style of riff for about 5 minutes with just every type of pickup you could want in like a nice studio, all set up, well recorded. It's like 13 guitars, metal or something.
Right.
Check out the video. It's really interesting to try and hear the differences. They've got like...
You sent me the video.
Yes.
And I said I couldn't hear the differences.
A lot of them are so subtle, you can't tell.
Yeah.
However, I mean, that's probably... Or, I mean, that could just be down to the fact they're in a studio and everything's getting compressed and going through high gain.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, half the time, once you've gone through loads of drive, you sort of filter out a lot of the subtleties of the guitar anyway. I mean, like, one of my... I used to play active pickups for years when I was playing in quite a heavy band, and I put an EMG 81 and a 60 in an old Ibanez RGR 321, just because as it came stock, it sounded really flat and lifeless, and put EMGs in it, and it just sounded like every other guitar I've got that's got EMGs in it.
Yeah, that's the thing with them. I recently purchased a secondhand jazz bass, a Fender Jazz that had EMGs fitted, retrofitted into the guitar, which obviously I am going to take out and put in put in some Seymour Duncan just vintage reissues or something like that. Well, actually, no, I decided on the DiMarzio J style pickups, their basic ones. I think they sound really good, so I'm going to give those a bash. Also, they sell them in a set, and Seymour Duncan sell those individually, and I kind of, you know,
easier to buy a set.
Yeah, easier to buy a set. But I took that bass on tour with me recently because I'm using a jazz bass at the moment. And I had a Geddy Lee jazz bass as my main bass and was using this other one as...
As in you own a Geddy Lee?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you realise
that? No, yeah. Well, I purchased it off of a friend, one of the last Japanese ones, which was quite nice. But I was switching between the Geddy Lee and the other one for the alternate tunings that we do. And I had to have the EMG pickups on 5 on the volume... on the guitar itself in order for it to be around the same level as the...
Is it just a normal 9-volt preamp in there, or is it...
Yeah, it's just a normal 9-volt. Shocked that it was that much louder without changing anything on the amp, which obviously I don't want to do when I'm sort of swapping over guitars. Mm. And bear in mind, I play flat wounds as well, you know. They're not especially responsive anyway, so it's just a massive, massive volume boost from EMGs. I just, for me, sort of, I cannot see how you could even use them. Like, if I couldn't, there's no way you could turn your guitar up on full and expect to get anything.
Well, from, I mean, with
your pedals or amplifier.
With guitars, I mean, EMGs aren't so much louder as it is that they're just more focused. They've got more in the mid range and then less top and bottom. So you don't get a lot of the extra sort of frequencies that don't really do a lot.
Yeah,
obviously. So sometimes they seem a bit louder because they're hitting the drive a bit more, but they don't actually come out louder in terms of level.
It affects bass quite differently in that all bass amps obviously come with, or most bass amps come with a 15 to 20 decibel cut if you're using an active bass.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually have my cut on for my passive bass because I use an Orange Bass Terror, which is the loudest amp in the human world. I mean, literally, I have it on 3, and that's
loud,
like
enough.
Yeah, that's far, far too loud. But so for that reason, I've kind of always found them a little bit impractical, just because I know loads of bass players use active stuff. Just personally, I've just found them just blindingly loud.
But then you're scared of anything that's got batteries in.
Oh, really scared.
Me
really
too,
scared.
But batteries are for flashlights, geez. They're not for guitars.
That's an excellent expression.
The old Bill Lawrence quote. The pickup designer that designed all like the 80s Blade humbuckers.
Oh, no, I've never heard that quote.
What did he say?
That he said...
That was it.
Oh, batteries belong in flashlights.
And guitars. Yeah, I agree with that. I fully agree with that. I tell you what, I agreed with it halfway through tour when the bass started cutting out in the one song I use it for,
like,
a set.
What is this doing?
And of course, because it's retrofitted, I have to take the whole control panel off because there's been no cavity cut in the back.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
No, thank you.
Anyway, moving on. Next question. Michael Robinson has asked, seeing as we have fresh blood, if you had £1,000 for your gigging rib? If you had £1,000 to buy some ribs, guitar, amp, and pedals, what would you go for?
Guitar, amp,
and pedals. You've got to fit the whole thing in for £1,000.
£1,000?
Yeah. So, I mean, think about it. You're going to have to spend. It's got to be a gigging rig. You know that you're not going to be able to pick an amp up for less than £400.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to have to spend around, I guess, the same on £300 to £400 on five on an amp, £300 on a guitar, and then that's going to leave you
£200.
Maybe like a DSL-40 if you want some rock on the Marshall.
Really, I'm surprised to hear you go for this. Is your gigging rig?
This isn't just a random selection.
Yeah, it's not just
this.
I wouldn't use it.
How much is the? How much are the Roland Blues cubes?
£409
Yeah. Okay. So just call it £400
£400 So I'd go with the I'd go with the Roland Blues Cube.
That's the 40-watt smaller version.
I'd go for that, but I mean that is giggable.
Yeah, 100.
I'd go for that.
I mean, for £1,000, we're not going to be blowing down any doors.
No, exactly.
Volume wise, we're not able to afford to.
So I personally, I'd go for the Blues Cube. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Oh, I can't get that. And then I'd probably go for.
I mean, I'd be looking like classic vibe.
It would have to be a tele. Like I was going to say a Telecaster, but I mean, this is for me. Yeah. So depending on the style of music.
You said your the guitar you most wanted was a 51 Nocaster.
Yeah, but this isn't for playing live. This is for playing live. I wouldn't be able to use the Telecaster in my band.
It's a gigging rig.
This is a gigging rig. Okay. So I'd go for the Cube, just because I know that the gain on there is high enough for my stuff, but I can also, you know, mess around and play around with the clean channels because, you know, even though I play in a heavier side of pop-punk side of things, I could we still use clean guitar in it. And then I'd probably go for the Schecter Omen Extreme 6.
Yeah, great
literally
guitar.
Literally, passive pickups, maple neck, jumbo frets, rosewood fretboard, cool, really, really lovely dark blood red quilt top and a mahogany body. If I was going to pick a Schecter, apart from the Keith Marrow model,
as well, isn't it?
No, it's a bolt-on.
Oh, it's bolt-on.
Yeah. Apart from the Keith Marrow signature, this is the only one I would buy, and it's about $399
Amazing.
$299 sorry, and it's just absolutely incredible.
And so, available in Schecter's sort of trademark red.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
See-through black cherry.
Yeah. See-through black cherry. It's just that's the Schecter finish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's like £700 altogether with
that
the amp and the guitar.
That leaves you quite a lot of money for pedals then.
Yeah, exactly, which allows me to get the Nova System.
Ah, there you go.
So there you go. So I'd have the Nova System to push the Cube, the overdrive, because it's got the analog drive. You've got all my effects on there, including a tuner, even though it's not that good. The Omen Extreme 6, because of the style of music I play in, it would be pretty good, and it's coil tappable, so I could use it single coil sounds if I didn't want to play in the heavier sound. And then you've got this Blues Cube, which just covers everything.
Yeah. Well, you've had time to think about it, Lee.
And mine would be the same, but with a classic vibe Strat.
Really? You'd go for exactly the same amp and pedal combo.
Yeah, he's just cheating. He's just cheating because he doesn't want to think.
I can't believe that neither of you have mentioned the Fender Modern Player mini Strats. The short scale Strats.
We're cutting back on budget, not scale length.
Yeah, I know, but have you seen they're like £250 now? They've come down in price again because they've discontinued the short scale Telecaster.
Can you imagine me tuning down a short scale Strat and Tele?
It
to
doesn't
drop
matter. You'd have to tune
Put
it up.
13, yeah, exactly.
You'd have to tune it up to G.
Yeah.
all your songs would be in open G.
Yeah.
Just you take up slide.
It comes with 11s, put 13s on it. You can
get it down a bit. No, I'm not feeling it, Geese. I love those guitars, they're great, but not for anything that I would use them for.
I mean, my first guitar was a 3/4 size LX30, but I was 10 and about 4 foot tall.
They're still amazing, though. Don't you think it's incredible you can have something with Fender on the headstock for £250?
I think the main
with that Gretsch pickup.
The main thing about it is our till girl, who is no longer here, Anna. We all know how tiny Anna is. We built a plinth for her behind the till so she could see over it.
Yeah,
she bought the guitar because of how tiny she is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's a true testament to what that guitar really is for.
I think at £250 or however much it is that they've come down to now, they're interesting as like a toy, but I wouldn't buy one as a gigging thing. When I said DSL-40, which is a perfectly reasonable suggestion, you were all like, no, it's got to be your gigging rig. So you're now gigging in a math rock band playing bass on a 3/4 size guitar.
I am, that is
through
true.
Through a DSL-40.
Through a DSL-40. You've got this very wrong.
It's my choice.
Your band are going to be so angry.
Don't judge me.
What's your gigging rig?
My gigging rig for under £1,000, it's much harder for bass players because amps are more expensive for bass players. So
you guys have got the direct ports that you can go through and stuff like that.
No, only losers do that.
oh my god,
it's really difficult. I'd have to go for the only gigging thing I can think of that I could afford on that budget would. Have to
come
be.
On. You're making funny faces here, Joe.
Making funny faces. I can do the new Fender. I can do one of the Fender Rumble combos, which are absolutely brilliant,
and they look amazing.
And they look
great.
Don't
they? Supersonic knobs on it.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Supersonic style knobs.
Yeah, like the top mounted panels. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, like the old school blackface.
Yeah, but the actual knob controls on them are like those white or those sort of cream
The radio knob.
Yeah. They look great, and you can pick up like their 500 watt combo, which is brilliant because, you know, like top down controls on a combo and a silver face is really cool. You can pick that up for sub 400 quid. I think it's about 380, something like that, for the which is great, which still leaves me £600. And the good thing about bass is I can spend 250 quid on one of the vintage modified jazz basses, and that would be all you'll ever need. They're totally brilliant. So still one of the most, it was something like across the last decade, the second most sold guitar in the world was the 70s reissue jazz bass that Squire put out, the maple bodied inlays. It's been one of the most ridiculously popular instruments across the board of all time, cool. Potentially.
Yeah, but Fender are good at just doing that in terms of numbers. Like the Hot Rod Deluxe is like the best selling valve amp of all time.
Really?
Apparently, yeah. Like MI sales track in the States, if you look at it, it's like number one. Like,
really? Amazing. Time. Yeah. Blues Junior's got to be coming up on that.
It's America, isn't it? I think they want the extra watts.
Yeah. I guess so. So I'd go for one of those, which is about 250 quid, and that would leave me a ton of money to do a bit of a proper pedal board. Yeah, probably something I'd probably spend a couple of hundred quid, maybe just on like a really good preamp, maybe something like the Aguila Tone Hammer pedal, or like the Sans Amp Bass VT, which I use anyway. It's something like that. They're really good.
Cool.
Anyway, let's take one last question before we go, because we're at about time now.
Really?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. So, do you guys have you got the questions printed or not? I was going to ask you which one you wanted me to ask, but I don't think you've got it in front of you. So, I will
pick the one about the amps.
The perfect home.
Yeah,
I think so. Doug Leek asks, what perfect home stroke bedroom wattage for a tube head or combo that will never be gigged? He wants to make use of all the tubes for maximum tone. Do we have any amp suggestions?
Well, in terms of power for bedroom, I think anything more than 1 watt is probably too much.
Really? I would have been...
Yeah.
It depends where you live, though.
I'm thinking Vox AC4.
Yeah, like the AC4.
Guys, I use a 50-watt EVH 5153 at home.
No, yeah, but you can't know, but realistically, there's no way...
Yeah, but they've got master volumes. You can just drip the master volume right down.
Yeah, but maximum tone. He's looking for...
Yeah, judging from the question, I'm assuming he wants to push it into like power amp saturation.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't what those 5150s are about. No, they're all preamp drive. That's why there are so many preamp valves in there.
No way in hell you're going to be able to get output stage drive out of a 50-watt amplifier anyway.
I don't think you can anyway in any situation.
No.
That's what 30-watt amps are for.
Without being completely insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for home use, I still find a lot of 5-watt amps too much.
Really?
For a terrace house, if you want to really wind it up.
I mean, have you heard one of those Class 5s cranked? They're loud.
Yeah, like they're actually powerful.
They're so good, those Class 5s.
Yeah, I mean, the Marshall have redone them again in that roulette series.
Roulette series, so you can get them red and black, essentially.
In some silly colours.
Yeah.
But the white and the black one, I think, actually looks pretty cool in the combo.
Yeah, fine, whatever. The Class 5s were brilliant before, anyway. They didn't need to put them in different Tolex, but
more of that stuff.
Yeah.
I just think to wind it up and really get that power amp stuff going, they just end up really loud, especially if they've got a decent speaker in them.
Mm. So what suggestion then?
Like a little HT1.
Oh yeah, the Blackstar stuff.
Yeah,
oh,
and then you've got the advantage of having like a proper dual ended power amp, because a lot of like the smaller amps are all single ended, so they just sound totally different anyway. Mm. You're looking at me a bit.
No, that's a good idea.
Anything with sort of one valve in the power amp is always going to sound a bit different because the drive is so asymmetric. Because they've got power amp, preamp valves used in the power amp that then give you better drive.
Yeah, I guess so. Joss, any other alternative?
I mean, Luke knows more about the amplifier situation than I do. especially when it comes to lower wattage stuff. I mean, as I said, because...
And it has to be valve.
Exactly. I mean, most of the stuff that I've used valve amplifier-wise at home, you know, I even had a Marshall JVM 100-watt four-channel head, but because it's got a master volume, I can bring it right down, but that's not, you know, using the output stage.
No.
So I don't really, unfortunately, know that much about that sort of side of things, so I don't think I can really put in. So I'd probably agree with Luke if he says the HT1.
Agree with me. Yeah. Or, I mean, thinking about it now, maybe like the Moore, like the little BM.
Oh, yeah.
They've done
never tried one.
The 6V6s don't have a lot of headroom in them anyway, so they sort of tend to bottom out.
Yeah.
So if you're wanting like maximum power amp drive, you can hit those pretty hard. And then just run it through a little sort of 1x10 cab.
Yeah.
But then 110s always tend to sound a bit boxy by themselves
With the Orange Micro Terra come into play at all?
They're not valve.
They are valve preamp.
There's no power amp.
There's no power amp.
All right.
Although, I mean, now I've suddenly got the fear that the HT1...
I thought the HT1 was just pre...
Oh god, we've got this entirely wrong.
Vox AC4.
Vox AC4. Hand wired.
There you go. This is exactly why I was choosing the Vox AC4. Thank you.
I mean, they're
choosing Kettner.
Yeah, well, I think it's Tube Meister 5. Yeah. As long as you're okay with like that crystal clear.
Yeah,
sort of clean
super
channel.
Clean,
yeah.
Pedal based clean. You could use pedals on that for days.
What was I going to say about the AC4? Go for the hand wired because it's got the green back in it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And
they also look amazing.
They look amazing. They're beautifully put together.
Vox are very good at finishes over the last few years. They've made some amazing looking AC4s.
Yeah.
We've had green ones and blue ones and those sort of linen finish ones and purple.
It was
as big as your head.
The blue that I really wanted.
Yeah. I like the sort of British Racing green finish they did.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Very cool.
All of them. Oh, wicked. Okay, boys, well, that pretty much brings us to the end. Well, I'm going to cut off some of the questions because we've run out of time, but we'll take some more questions next week and we'll come up with a proper topic as well to go through next week, which maybe you can help us with. We will take it up then. Until then, make sure you keep commenting on the Facebook group. Ask us loads of questions so we've got things to talk about next week. The Facebook group can be found on facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. If you want to get hold of me at all, you can do. You can get me on Twitter at @Yosef_900, or you can email me on joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Before I pass over to the guys for their sign-offs, I'd like to say that there were some comments on the group the other day about what a good idea promotional plectrums, GAK plectrums would be. And virtually as soon as that comment went up, I was able to post a picture with Joss's help of me holding two bags full of GAK plectrums.
Because that's how fast
we can print plectrums. That is exactly how fast we print plectrums. But actually, it seems that great minds think alike. And we were in the process of sorting out some promotional plectrums. So in that event, for all podcast listeners, the first 10 people who can write the word plectrum on our Facebook group, I will send you a free pack of GAK plectrums, so make sure you do that. Luke Taft, how can people get hold of you?
Luke.taft@gak.co.uk.
Excellent stuff. And that's your one point of reference. Excellent. And Joss Allen?
Three different points once again. You can get me on the GAK Vision YouTube channel. Ask me questions on any of the videos there. Also my Instagram, just search Joss Allen, A-L-L-E-N, on Instagram, and you can find my posts there, which is pretty cool. And also my standard email address, which is joss.allen@gak.co.uk.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Thanks very much, boys, and thanks for listening again. We'll be back this time next week. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.